Immortals in 2011 is a film directed by Tarzem Singh. The film revolves around Theseus, played by Henry Cavill, who is chosen by Zeus to fight the evil king Hyperion. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore humanity. Let's go back to 2011 with the great cast talking at San Diego Comic-Con.
And up first on our radio roundtables is Luke Evans, an actor who's on the rise, who's going to be appearing in The Hobbit, and also Kellan Lutz, of course known for his Twilight films, but I think he's just a young actor to watch on his own. He tells us what he likes about Comic-Con.
You know, I missed out on the Twilight one, the Breaking Dawn one. My flight was delayed, so I was really looking forward to doing the Immortals one. I'm just glad to have the fans support, you know, a movie outside of the Twilight ones. You know, we all work our butts off as actors in those movies, but to have them actually step outside and continue on with your career as you're a part of something. And Immortals is epic, so it's just great to have them come out.
More on Immortals in just a moment.
That's going to happen for you next year with The Hobbit. If you're here.
I'm coming out for that.
Wow. Hobbit Hearts.
Will we be here next year? I guess.
Will we be done by then?
What month are we in? Sorry?
August?
July.
Oh, wait,
probably July. I'm guessing.
Maybe, but wait, I think we'll still be shooting.
See how it goes.
Yeah, it's a year of my life starting next week.
This movie, I mean, did you guys know much about Greek mythology before you got involved? Henry seems to know quite a bit. But.
No, he would.
What was that?
Henry said he knew loads about it. He's lying. You know he's lying. He's totally lying to you. He knew nothing about Greek mythology. I had to tell him everything.
Oh, okay.
Twice.
just to get it in, yeah.
No, I mean, I probably knew as much as the next person, you know. But something as old as Greek mythology and the story of Zeus and Poseidon, all these characters, they've been around for thousands of years. Mm. So there's plenty of research you can do. Actually, there's probably too much.
It seeps into you, the consciousness, I guess. You must know something before you embark upon it.
It does. I mean, from Poseidon and growing up with Little Mermaid was so easy. So I guess I'll just watch the movie a couple times and I'm set.
So this is a musical, right?
I dance a lot. You know, I use my trident as a pole. But it's great too because we're young gods, you know, so we kind of get a bring the youthfulness out, the agility in the fight. So have fun with it. I mean, we aren't gods sitting in thrones. We're gods playing like we just found out we have a new power. Let's go. Have fun with it, with responsibility, of course.
Because you're Theseus's father.
I am.
Is that right? You're about 3 years.
I'm Theseus's father.
You're Theseus.
I'm Zeus.
Zeus.
It's like an episode of EastEnders.
What? You don't remember this?
We've moved here. Actually, do you know what? Greek mythology, that's. Yeah, come on.
Clearly,
now.
You didn't read it.
Clearly, you don't know your Greek mythology.
I'll look it up.
Why should fans go see the film? What differs you from 300 or any of those type of movies?
Because we're in it.
Oh. Well, you were Apollo in Clash of Titans, right?
Yes.
And now you're playing, you know, Zeus. So, what would you say is the difference between us and Clash of Titans? Because it's obviously going to be compared to that. Since
I'm
came
so
out
confused. Who are you?
What in this I'm Zeus. And that I was Apollo. I upgraded. I went. I turned into Liam Neeson.
So lucky.
No, the film, I mean, first of all, the directors are very, very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every director is a different storyteller, and Tarzem is very specific. He's incredibly detailed in his work, and what he does is always very, you know, it's his work. So that immediately sets it apart. But there's no comparisons to be made with this and Clash of the Titans, and until you see the movie, and you'll appreciate what I mean by that. You know, it might be Greek mythology, but I took away the fact that he was a god in my head. I took that out of the equation and just focused on the fact that he was a father, and a king, and a brother, and a lawgiver. A warrior, all of these things, and an overseer, and all of those things, and focused on those that layered the character. The god thing, you just have to believe that people are going to believe you look like a god when you do it, because but that's not very interesting to me. The interesting part was showing the flaws and the emotional side to this kid, to this my character. You know, the fact that when he does kill his son, it hurts. He's upset by it. I didn't want him to just be this cold, big old guy sitting on a stone throne, not having any emotion about anything.
How much did you guys know about Tarzem before you took this movie on?
Oh, I mean, I knew of him, but I didn't. Now, watching the pop videos and stuff, I didn't know there were his, yeah. And I'm like, that's as much as I knew.
It's really interesting to know. I didn't, but I love The Fall and I love The Cell. I mean, brilliant movies. I'm very much into art and I love painting surrealism and just creating these worlds for myself. So making a goal as an actor to work with a director as brilliant as he is, and then to find out that he's a comedic fella. I mean, he's one of the most funniest people I've ever worked with. I know, so easygoing, so actor friendly. I never would have expected that.
Well, directors are artists, yeah. You know, yeah. And some are very visual and some care about other things and they're not that interested in, you know, more continuity. You know, every director focuses on a different thing, and Tarsim's work. It speaks for itself. Everything's very detailed, you know, it's very accurate, and he cares for very small details and things and makes sure that they look correctly. And I think he's mentioned once, he's like, he said compared to Caravaggio crossed with Fight Club, and there are moments, even the poster, we looked at the poster today and it looks like an oil painting, you know, and a proper Caravaggio fresco, you know. And there are scenes in the film that absolutely, when we saw playback, when you saw them on the screen, you just think, wow. If that was a still, it could be a painting.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved his energy. I'd rather have a director who's all over the place than doesn't know his place, if that makes sense. And, you know, and you just have to ask questions because he knows every answer. He has every answer ready to spill out. And it's really cool to work with a director like that.
The look that he did for the costumes was really very stylized, really something we haven't seen in Greek mythology.
Well, that was Eiko. That was her. I think he gave her an idea and she ran with it. Actually, she sprinted with it. And some of these costumes were, I remember trying them on the first time and then throwing it at this crown I had, which was like brass and it weighed like a couple of pounds in weight. I had to fight with it and I was like, wow, this is going to be difficult. But they looked incredible, and she just went further with the designs than most people would have dared go. But that's her style, and that's why she's so, she never stops working, you know?
Yeah, it's great to be a part of a project where, you know, we have a nutritionist, so getting in shape was very key. We are playing gods, you know, but by getting in shape, and we worked out hours a day. Whenever we weren't shooting, we'd all go to the gym. There's no competition. We were just all very supportive of each other. And, you know, it was just very brother-like. But then we had to do the epic fight, and we had to work with, staff weapon training for my Trident, which I've never done. I've done a lot of mixed martial arts. So to experience that with the best staff trainers and then to incorporate that with all our individual weapons was really great to see at the panel for the first time for myself.
No injuries?
Always.
So we're covered in marks and bruises and cuts, but nobody broke anything. And one of the stuntmen had his teeth taken out. Oh yeah, Tarsim injured himself.
Dancing.
He was dancing and pulled his Achilles tendon and then ripped it because he didn't stop.
That's the man.
Yeah, he really is.
You guys are okay. Thank God.
We're fine.
Yeah,
we're left with our limbs. Okay.
Fantastic.
Brilliant.
Nice to meet you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Now with Stephen Dorff and Frida Pinto. Frida Pinto is actually another actress to watch after her appearance in Slumdog Millionaire, also in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and now Immortals. The duo discuss Comic-Con.
It's interesting. I've never been before. So it's
really?
Kind of a trip, yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely a trip.
it's
like a film festival on steroids for genre movies, you know? It's basically, you know, each movie is different, you know? Some movies you'll go to Venice, some movies you'll go to Cannes, some movies you'll go to Comic-Con, you know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't been here for, like, Blade and stuff, but I think I was always working when I had a movie here.
Yeah. You had a lot of people shout out Deacon Frost today?
A lot of questions about the, you know, is there a prequel? Are you doing one? Or, you know, it's just, like, craziness. I mean, if Steve Norrington will ever rise out of his writing his graphic novels or whatever the hell he's doing, maybe one day we'll do something. But I love Steve. I mean, he's a mad genius. It's just he doesn't like working in the system. You know, so.
Well, each film has been different so far. I mean, Slumdog Millionaire was what it was, and people love loved it, and none of us expected it. So I really can't say that it was all planned or anything. Mm-hmm. And with Julian's film, the one that followed Slumdog, I knew it was not going to be one of those that people are going to be like, oh, come here, let's talk about this, you know, that kind of a thing. It was going to be controversial, and it was. Woody Allen's film has Miral, yeah, and then Woody Allen's film has its own audience. But these films, you kind of know it. There is going to be a massive fan base for it. You know, there's going to be a big fan following as well, especially the films accepted and people love it. And it works. It works in getting future projects as well. And when the script's great and amazing actors to work with, amazing directors to work with, there's no way you can just, you know, I think you'd just be stupid to just say no. So there was no pressure in terms of, oh, now I have to do a film where everybody sees me, kind of a thing. I just wanted to do a film that I really felt, you know, I would believe in, and felt that I could really challenge, you know, the acting chops, if at all, you know, because with Slumdog, I did have, to be honest and fair, 20 minutes in the film, you know, and as good as it was, an amazing experience that it was, I was kind of dying to kind of go guns blazing into something that would challenge me a lot more. And so with every project that I have taken, it's been, okay, what can I do that is different from what I did from the earlier one? And, you know, that's the way I have been looking at every project that comes my way.
What was it like for both of you to step into this world and really dive into it?
Sorry, they just keep making fun of me on the other table.
By the way, somebody named Haley just called somebody. Kaylee. you know, I didn't get to, I don't know too much about mythology. I didn't really, you know, I'm not a mythology buff myself. And, you know, Tarzan was pretty clear. And I think my character also is not as spiritually, you know, he doesn't even know what the hell these people are talking about half the time. And he's pretty much just wants to make out with Frida Pinto in the movie. You know, I mean, Stavros is kind of, he's a slave, he's a thief. And I think, he, you know, if he had his way, he'd probably be able to steal, you know, Frida and take her south, you know, head south to the other side of the border where Mickey went by a nice little farm. I think Stavros would love to do that. But ultimately, the world is in dire need of some safety. And so he teams, I think he'd rather team up with this good-looking person and this crew than be alone and die, you know. So I think I didn't really get too mythological. I think for Frida, it was probably maybe a little different because you're, you know.
But did I read? Did you ask me if I read?
Read it, or just like, what was it like, your impressions of stepping into it?
Well, the thing is, I really couldn't read anything because even if I did, it would just be for myself, like for pleasure. But the vision that Tarsem had for this film was completely his own and had nothing to do with things that I probably read in the book. We were changing a lot of things around that would suit Tarsem's vision. So in that sense, I really did not read anything or, you know, read anything for the film, for my character. Was that the question?
Or just your impressions of that?
And my
of that world that you stepped into when you took them.
Well, it was different. It was very different. I mean, with Stavros' character, like you said, it was very grounded and straightforward. With my character, there's this internal battle going on because she has this gift where she can see the future, and she has, you know, the gift of seeing the future and having these visions that can help people. But at the same time, it's agonizing because she can't really feel. She can't really, you know, she wants to feel like the human would feel. So she's got to make this big decision between keeping that amazing gift or, you know, losing it all for love. And it's kind of, you know, to just keep it all internalized. And like Tarsem didn't want it to be really loud and, you know, over dramatic or very comic-y. You know, he just didn't want it to look like a gimmick. He just wanted to keep it real. I think that was the interesting part about my character, you know.
Sci-Fi Talks Looked Back at Immortals continues in a moment.
So, you know, you could have fallen in love with Stavros.
I could have. I could have, but really except I didn't.
Pisses me off. But I think in like 300 movies, like, you know, from what I know, and movies like Sin City or what Rodriguez does, you know, you're literally standing on the green screen. There may be a piece of a car or a fender or, you know, you have your one sword, but you have like things on your head. I mean, it really feels unorganic, you know what I mean, from what I've heard. This was kind of different. It felt like we were making a real movie, you know, and there's just this huge green screen behind a set as big as this room, you know what I mean? So, you know, when you have horses that are dead or exhausted laying on the ground, they're real horses, you know? when you, you know, you're not, so it felt still like I could feel and touch things and, you know, communicate and do my job. You know, I think it might be more difficult if we're just standing there and
imagining everything.
I don't think I could do those kinds of things. I don't think I'd be the right, I'd get too frustrated, I think.
No, it was like a living set in that sense. Definitely like a living set. Everything, I think Tarzan was very generous in that sense.
It's
to kind
very
of
alive,
keep it real in a way so that actors didn't have to imagine all of that and
it was
get
the
frustrated.
Perfect medium, you know, like when you see what we saw out there tonight, there's a lot that wasn't there, but there was a lot. The basis, and I would say 50%, the foundation was there. You know, that always helps. Definitely, he can. You know, Tarsem is, I think, you know, very talented guy too. I think Tarsem, like Steve, why I say Matt Genius is just he doesn't care about Hollywood. You know, he's like he's one guy that no matter how much money you throw at him, he won't come back. Usually, you know what I mean? Or he'll try and then he'll get annoyed and move on and write another novel or so. You know, the guy's just not. He's a real artist. You know, whereas Tarsem can do everything. He can play the game at the studio. He can cast his movie. He can make the movie. He's much more of a working director that way, you know what I mean? But I'm a fan of all the directors that I work with usually, you know what I mean? For the most part, pretty good instincts, and most of my experiences are usually pretty pleasurable, you know? I mean, me and Steve Norrington, we kind of batted heads a little bit when we made Blade, but now we're like really close friends, you know? And he's somebody that calls me when he sees somewhere, or he sees a little movie I've done, or a big movie, or, you know. He hasn't called me yet about the Immortals movie yet, because I don't think he knows I'm in it, because the trailer doesn't have me in it yet. But
well, I think Mad Genius is kind of appropriate for Tarsem as well, in a way. I mean, there's a lot of things that he would listen to, and a lot of things that he would pretend like he's listening to, but really not listening to it, you know, because he knows what he wants, he knows what he's chasing, and he's just following that. I guess I say it all the time, I'm going to say it again, I feel he's got the imagination of a little child, but what he has is the advantage of putting it out there, executing it. A little child would just be lost in his or her imagination, building new things, and he goes out there and puts it for people to see as well. So a lot of things he says sometimes go over the head, but you just kind of listen to.
I can't understand some of the stuff he's saying. I'd be like, got it, okay. He's a pretty good communicator. I mean,
yeah,
he's
he is
clear. You know, he doesn't get too deep on things. You know, I mean, it wasn't
when he explains. I guess the sets and things like that gets confusing when he says
like the models and showing me that the cliff is here. I'm just like, dude, I'm not. I can't.
That's fine.
Know.
I have
show
a cliff.
Show me the set. I can't.
Because that's because he's seen it all in his head, kind of unravel, you know. But now it's difficult for us to get into his head. But in terms of direction, performance, and all of that, I think he's very clear. Very clear.
He'd do some fun stuff with me too to get reactions of Frida to change up her reaction. So he'd have me say lines different, like be really nice, maybe the way normally I'd be more of an ass, probably, you know. And he had me like seduce you and do different things to get Frida to kind of.
Yeah, because
trip
I think
out a little bit, you know.
Yeah, I think the thing with my character is that I'm not supposed to react too much to what he's saying, you know, in a way, and that's what he wants. He wants a reaction, in a way, almost a reaction.
Yeah, just
but
to
I
that
think,
point. Right?
Yeah, but I think the normal instinct for any girl, if you know, there's a pass made at her that is just sleazy, is just to kind of. But he didn't want me to do that, so it was very difficult at times. So Stephen had to play it down sometimes in order for me to not get
too.
Yeah,
find that balance.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Next, as I mentioned earlier, two of the producers of the film, Gary Nunari and also Mark Canton, who worked together on 300, joined our roundtable.
You know, and for us, the two of us, in particular, because Comic-Con is where we came first with 300, and it really made such an enormous impact, to say the least. This is always, you know, our first stop. But this was a big day, and we're thrilled. We're thrilled with everything that's going on. I think that people have to understand that the historical, mythological adventure is really a genre, you know. And the movies are very different. The style's different. The story is different. The entire history of it is different. And also, Frank Miller, who's the icon, wrote 300, and we invented this. So it's. But I understand where people go there. But it's limiting to think that way. Not that you are.
We have an extraordinary cast. Not to leave out Mickey Rourke, who is the giant and is the glue and the whole spine of the movie. And Isabel Lucas, who's wonderful. And others. It is romantic. It is a real quest and heroic story of a
a man who finds his the best version of himself and finds an awakening and really finds his faith. And so we think the themes are strong and it's sexy.
But okay, let's stick to that. Let's stick.
That's why I think people are going to relate to the movie.
Okay, what I think what he was asking is, in a way, look, Comic-Con is the right audience for this movie. Of course, we only show like what three minutes, so we never know. To tell you the truth, honestly, on every movie I made myself, and I can talk for him too, like I always do. We really never know how a movie, even the most successful. Listen, I didn't know how 300 was going to be until the first weekend. That's the only way. Sunday night, we go crazy. We go at the midnight show just to feel if the audience is happy. Those three nights are the most important nights when a movie. That's his girlfriend that he's going to get married with. I don't know. I think it would be too presumptuous sometime to say, you know, even if you can feel that something is good, you know, but you can say, oh, this movie is going to be a huge success. Now, after I say this, I can also say that this is the perfect audience for that kind of a movie. 300 and also Immortal. So, how can I say? It's the first test. You know, so did they like it? I think they liked it today. So I don't expect a different audience to go and see this movie. I mean, if there were like 6,000 people and let's say 80% of this audience liked it, I expect that maybe another 60% of the masses or the massive audience will like it. So in a logistic or a logical way, I think that I'm very happy. That's what I want to say, you know. But I can't declare victory until I cut the head of my enemy. Well, that was different because, you know, no matter what, Jerry was coming from a bunch of movies in his career, and we knew Jerry, the industry knew Jerry, but he didn't break in any specific role until he took the role of Leonidas, which, by the way, it's like a great role for any, it's a dreaming role for every actor. So I think that this is different, you know, because really the story with Henry, for example, is a very specific story because, you know, I cannot even explain. For some strange reason, we were sticking with Henry Cavill, which, by the way, at the time we picked Henry, he was coming out of The Tudor. So, I mean, if I go out today in this audience, hey, listen, I got the star of The Tudor, the people, they're going to throw me tomatoes. So, but... And we waited almost 1.5 years because this movie costed us 2 years before it became, okay, let's do it. So it was almost like, okay, let's do it, boom, and one studio would say, no, we cannot do it, too much money, too budget is too big. And actually, matter of fact, he started to train for 3 times. So when the movie finally became a green lead movie, he didn't really need to train because he was like in the most perfect shape because it was like 9 months of training and waiting. Are we making the movie? So why did we pick him? And I don't know, it maybe was an instinct, and we were faithful to an actor who for 9 months was training, hoping that the movie would go, and we were happy with him. Did we get calls from studios and say, listen, why don't we change, because if you get a bigger name, we probably green light the movie right away? Yes, we did, but we didn't do it. And I think now we've been rewarded because we do have, it's better to say we have Superman in the movie than the guy from Tudor. No offense to Tudor, of course, but so that's the story of Henry. You know what it is?
Was he good?
I think that in my experience, and I can go also bad, but there are actors and actresses, of course, that they bring with them the star role, and I think Henry had that from when he was young, and sooner or later it's going to happen. Now, you need to perform, and you need to train, and you need to do that, you need to work for that, because there may be some people, some actors, that they have a star within themselves, but they're not going to do it. But look, we knew Johnny Depp from when he was like a kid, And I offered Johnny Depp, when I was running a studio, millions and millions of dollars, and he said no to me. And he's my best friend. He always respected me because I was the first guy. And but why? Because I think that Johnny, for example, he knew that he had time. He only had to push the buttons. Okay, now I want to become a star. And I think Henry is that kind of actor. You know? Yeah. You can see when they have a complete pedigree to become a star, and only depends from them the day that they're going to push
the buttons. But one of the hardest things about being a producer is sticking by those people, because there are a lot of candidates for a role like that. And when you're not yet a star, everybody who's financing the movie has uncertainty. They deserve that. So you have to really believe in somebody. And so when it takes off, and now he has this amazing role from Zach, when it's good for him, for the movie, all of the movies, it's a gift, you know, it's a good thing. And he's a great guy, too. But we're not ready to talk yet, but we hope to be back to Comic-Con. And we've been very... The good thing about that, taking the time with that, is everyone involved has always felt so respectful of Frank and Zach and the material, that everyone wants to do, if there's going to be something related to it, they want to be great, not just like, oh, here's another one. So we're not in that business, but there's a lot of stuff happening soon.
Thank you guys.
Sorry. I give you a tip.
Bless you.
And lastly, we have the film star, Henry Cavill, who is Theseus, who is going to be starring in Superman Man of Steel for Zack Snyder, along with his director, Tarsem Singh. I remember seeing The Cell, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really interesting style, and I really like visually the way he approaches the film. The two talk about Comic-Con.
Great, so fun. Enjoyed it. Yeah, good fun. Yeah,
but, panel or
yeah, the panel, everything. So
I keep comparing it to porn to him. I say, you look in there in this dark little thing. People ask me questions. You're hoping there's more cute chicks out there than weirdos. just keep answering into this void. So that's all I remember.
Do you get to walk the floor? Have you done that yet?
No.
What is walk the floor?
There's a big floor with lots of geeks dressed in costumes trying to sell things.
Oh wow!
Yeah, you should go. It's no, seriously, it's great. There's some really cool stuff down there.
I just say, I got one thing from you, very disciplined. I'm not very disciplined, and I kind of, I think I'm a very selfish thing to say, but I can probably do all jobs on a film set, but I have no idea how actors do what they do, and they walk on hallowed ground. I couldn't do it in a million years, and when you tell them something, they're so trusting, and believe me, my stuff can tend to look very ridiculous, and then you have somebody out there, and you give them and say, look okay later, and how many times have they heard that before and seen it go wrong? And just the idea of trust from somebody like that without knowing you. And I think that's something I couldn't do. I think he did.
Yeah, we don't do that for everyone. Just for you.
Thank you.
What have we learned from Tarsem? How to keep the energy on set. One thing Tarsem did, which was fantastic, at the end of a 15-hour day, on the last day of the week, he'd ask you for a 16th hour. And he keeps the energy up. And it, the only reason why this movie was enjoyable was because of Tarsem. And he really knows how to stir the pot in a good way and keep everything moving and keep everything fresh. And that I respect a lot. And it's a kind of skill and a talent which is required on sets. And I hope I've taken some lessons with me from it.
For Mr. Cavill, the producers were saying how you stayed on this film for a long time before it was actually greenlit. Why did you stay with the script?
Tarsem. It's because of Tarsem.
I had only one guy. I would say the question isn't why did you stay on the script. We didn't really have a script that anybody could make. I would just say we only had one thing, only had Henry. And I just said, we stick with this guy, he's the best, we only have one scene. Start writing a script around that. Mm-hmm. Gods, do they live, do they die, do we even have gods? Yeah. Is it going to be Greek time with electricity? It was all in the air. The only one person I had was him. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't say that stay on a script for too long, we didn't have a script, we just stayed on a situation for too long.
What was the one scene you had?
Actually, it's not even in the movie.
No, not.
It's a little rowing scene in a boat. I just went and had him read it, and we met in London, and he read it, and it was perfect, and I told him, he read it, shit, change it like this. He went there, and I told him, no, he read it perfect earlier, I was wrong, he went there. Moved him all around, and I just thought, you know, he's not Man of Steel, I was saying he's Man of Copper, he's very malleable and ductile, you can beat him into any shape. So I told him, you've got a guy, right now, he's a king's son. In the end of the movie, right now, the way he ended up, he's a peasant. So I said, you can change whatever script you want, this man will deliver. So now we work on a script. we have a guy that I want to make a movie with. So then that's why it took a year and a few months. So to answer that question, we just had a situation and a person who I just thought was the best. One of the main reasons that kind of entered the story that I was saying was that I was, you know, I've been an atheist since I was 9 years old, and my mom, I blaspheme just about anything that you can think of, and I was giving my mom some crap, and she turned around about 3 years ago, and she turned around and said, like, you know, how do you think you're as successful as you are if it wasn't for my brain? And I thought, you know what, now that's an interesting situation. I die and I go up there and there is the old conventional bearded guy in the sky, and he goes, like, you, I've been wanting to screw you up forever, but because of this woman. And I thought, now that's a situation. So then I just thought, the only thing I couldn't think of it, if gods exist, how do you justify the kind of horrors in the world? So I couldn't figure that one out. The moment I came up with the reasoning of that, and I just thought, why don't they show up in front of the, you know, White House lawn and say, take us to your leader, don't be bad to each other, we exist. So once I said the question of free will trumps all, they will take anything, but if they interfere directly, you will just worship them like dogs. Like, you know, your true nature, what I kept saying, which they never wanted me to keep repeating, your true nature would never come out. If, as I said, you know, Muhammad walks through that door or Jesus through this door, I would never be able to walk into a toilet with a barely legal magazine again, because I think he existed. So I just said it had to be taken on faith. So the question of faith came up, and I just thought, if I keep that in mind and just think the gods don't interfere because they respect free will above all, your true nature would never come out if they just showed up and you just would go like a dog like that. So I started with that and just said the gods are not interfering, only for one thing. They can try to, kind of like parents who know the exam and they'll keep feeding you questions from the back, but they won't tell you because you won't be prepared for life. So they're trying to help a human, but he doesn't know that the person helping him is a god. That's allowed, but you don't interfere as gods. Once those elements came in, then it became a Greek film. Until that particular point, it was a film that had gods, and I didn't know if it was going to be Greek. It started with Greek times with electricity. It started all sorts of hodgepodge stuff, which is a bit too art-housey for them. So when they told me, if you go and keep it Greek and take out the Derek Jarman elements or, you know, the elements of that one, you can have it, I didn't think it hurt, and that's how the film evolved.
How did the character thesis for both of you evolve during the course of the film?
He changed completely. When I went to him, he was the king's son. He was the king. But one element that I never liked from the original script is, I think, which really works for the West, or actually around the globe a lot, which is, you're the chosen one. I just really viscerally react against that, because I just think, no, if a guy, that means, I mean, even in the East, it's such a big thing, like, you know, karma and all that crap. It isn't it. It's just, if you're really hardworking, you're the right guy, that's what needs to be special, not that, you know, your dad was the king who came in and, like, raped your mom in a garden. It didn't have to do with that. So all those things about gods coming, I just think it shouldn't be that. It should just be a regular guy that wants to be there. So he turned from a king's, so he said, how did he evolve? He turned from a king's son to a peasant whose mother was just raped in a village and nobody wants him. So he turned into a completely untouchable from up here. And I just said, Henry can play anything. So we stuck to it. So that's how the character changed. Now, you remember? But the one that you read was King's Son.
Yeah, very, very much a different kind of thing. And it gives it power when a man who shouldn't step up to the plate does. And doesn't only step up to the plate, but hits a home run. Mm. And as opposed to being, oh, well, of course, he's a demigod.
Yes, and not destined to. That's another problem that I have. Because I just think it just means, what if you aren't destined for greatness? It's dreadful. So I just said, no, I want a Joe Schmo that rises to the plate. Mm. Not a guy who's destined to do it.
Mm. Was that difficult as an actor adjusting to that? I mean, how late in the day were the changes? Were those changes?
Ooh, some things were on the day?
On the day. Yes. It was all the time. And he was so trusting, because it would change completely. But for me, the only time that I went to the studio was about 3 months before we shot, that I just said, we picked Henry when he was a king's son, because unfortunately you look at him and he looks like a king's son. I said, now you made him into, you know, like an untouchable. Yeah. And he's not that. But the reason you have to know is that he can act that person. So don't go around saying, but it's the guy who looks like a king's son and he's doing this, which we still have problems. Every now and then the solidarity is there, and Priscil comes in, but the king's son wouldn't sleep on such an old bed. I said, he's not the king's son anymore. Yeah. There are different pages.
That changed.
That changed long ago. So it was changing all the time.
I've always believed that Greek mythology, those were our first superheroes. Mm-hmm. How has that helped you now transitioning to play Superman?
The only help it's really provided is in the physical aspect. Going through that once is a great preparation for going through it the second time, obviously. You do it in a very different way, with a very different approach method, and you're prepared for the hardships that it provides. you're very right in saying that the Greek heroes were the original superheroes, and I think with this story, it's a little different because Theseus is an ordinary man. Yes, he does some extraordinary things, but he's just an ordinary man. In the other job, he's very far from ordinary.
Have you seen the suit? The Superman suit?
What suit?
Have you seen it? Tried it on?
I have. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
Does it fit?
Yeah.
Does it
no.
Fit? Not anymore.
Cool. Thank you very much, guys.
Very special thanks to Relativity Pictures for allowing me to attend this roundtable. It was really cool, very lively, a lot of great opinions, and everyone seemed to be more themselves, which I really dug.
Look for Immortals on Max, which is by subscription. Greek mythology is woven into the world's myths. Superheroes replace them with the message that we can be better than what we are. Sci-Fi Talk Plus continues its special offer, but it is going to be limited. Time is running out. There's over 1,000 episodes, free, uncut, and even special programs. Best part, it's free. Click on the link in the show notes for that free lifetime access. But the special offer will expire soon, so take advantage of it. This is Tony Tolato.